Let's face it, running a construction company can be chaotic. As business owners, we wear a lot of hats and we're constantly putting out fires. Luckily, there's a way to work simpler with BuilderTrend. I'm a huge advocate for using technology to help run AFT, and BuilderTrend is one of the most crucial tools I rely on to keep me on top of every detail. Built just for home builders and remodelers, this is an easy-to-use platform that helps manage all aspects of my business. My team's been using BuilderTrend's project management platform for the last 5 years, and we love that they're always improving and adding new features to make our lives easier. This is something that we've really tried to take on internally to find ways to improve our system every day. BuilderTrend just released a full set of financial services, added new tools like Takeoff to make estimates more accurate, and launched a total rebrand with a new mission to help change the future of construction, and we are on board. To learn more about how BuilderTrend can help calm the chaos in your construction business, visit buildatrend.com/AFT. When you schedule a demo, you'll receive an exclusive 60-day money-back guarantee only available to my podcast listeners. I'm following BuilderTrend into the future in construction. Come on board with us. Don't miss the Contractors Coalition Summit. You can go to contractorscoalitionsummit.com and join us in Minneapolis, Minnesota, Wednesday, May 15th through Sunday, May 19th. This is going to be an incredible event. Again, for all of you builders and designers looking to take your business to the next level, to learn about all things systems, organization, pricing, social media, marketing, how to be a better business owner, all the things that we wish we knew as early business owners many years ago. We're going to speak about that, also give you a Dropbox with all the content, including contracts and other documents that we're using, as well as KPIs, key performance indicators. So don't miss it. It's a huge opportunity. Some amazing vendors will be there as well that you can network with. So again, Wednesday, May 15th through Sunday, May 19th, 2024 in Minneapolis, go to contractorscoalitionsummit.com.
And I remember vividly somebody telling me, when your story becomes less about you and more about helping others, that's when you're going to start to really make an impact. And I think that is when it became, this is my purpose, this is my identity, and this is now what inspires me continue to grow and to be challenged to evolve as a human being, as a speaker, as whatever I was trying to get into.
Very excited about our guest today. We have JR Martinez on with us. Welcome, JR.
Welcome. Well, Brad, thank you so much for having me on, man. It's a pleasure to be here and looking forward to this conversation.
Yeah, I've been beyond excited for this one upcoming. JR's veteran, author, actor, podcaster, public speaker. Could probably spend another 5 minutes giving that intro. So you've done quite a lot in your accomplished career here, and with which much more to go. So appreciate you making time today.
Well, thank you, man. I mean, I think the biggest thing for me is, you know, I did an event the other day and they introduced and acknowledged a family that had lost a service member overseas. And you know, of course, they brought me in to speak, and they really wanted me to focus on what are the things that inspire me, that motivate me. And as someone who's constantly being asked to go and do this work, and I said, you know, and I obviously acknowledged the family, and I said, you know, that is what motivates me and inspires me, because those are two different things, right? And, you know, inspiration is something that has to live within you. Motivation is short term. It's there's just, you can't, you know, it's like something that gets you in this moment. But for me, what inspires you is something that's in you. So it constantly allows you to continue to show up. And so for me, it's, I've been blessed with a second chance at life. And when I looked at this family, and I understand that they could have been very easily been my family. And, you know, for me, it's like, I'm just going to make the most of this second chance that I got at life and do everything. And I don't care if it's something that's outside of my comfort zone or not, because you know what, the way I look at it is like, I've survived death. I overcame death. I mean, God, for me to go on audition to become an actor when I've never done it before, like, that's fine. I mean, like, that's okay. I mean, yeah, there's some hurdles I got to get over to get to that point. But the point is like, you know, that's kind of the way that I operate at this point in my life.
It's interesting. I think your story is really pertinent to the conversation here. But before we get into that, you mentioned motivation versus inspiration. When was that light bulb coming off for you when you realized that differentiator between the two, and you know how that's contextualized you and you know your goals now moving forward?
When I identified what my purpose was, when I understood what my purpose was, you know, when I was in the military, you know, I was introduced to this concept of service, and I fell in love with that idea. And when I was injured at the age of 19, literally, this was 7 months into my military career, 3 months of that was in basic training. And 1 month of that, I was at home for convalescent leave before I had to report to my unit. So I was only with my unit for a couple of months before I had to deploy overseas to Iraq. And obviously I was injured literally a few days shy of a month of being in country. And when I was injured and I came out of my medical induced coma after 3 weeks, I was told that I was going to be medically discharged. I was not going to be allowed to stay in the Army. And that was devastating to me because even though I had only been in a short amount of time, I had fell in love with this concept of service. Like I had like grasped it. It had been introduced to me. I felt it. I understood I was part of something bigger than myself. It was my purpose, right? I was one of those that, you know, 9/11 was partially the reason that I joined the military. And so the idea that I wasn't going to be able to fulfill that commitment, that I wasn't going to be able to complete my deployment with the rest of the guys in my unit, was devastating to me. And as you can imagine, like anybody, when something is stripped away from you, which is your identity, I literally went through this roller coaster of emotions and trying to grasp and process exactly, you know, what role I was going to play in what we like to call as veterans, the civilian world. Like, how was I going to function in the civilian world? Not only just as a, what everyone was telling me, you're a disabled veteran, but just as a veteran in general, like, how was I going to do that? And then on top of that, you throw the physical injuries and the appearance, and that presents its own challenges. And so I just kind of was, eventually after about a year after I was injured, I got involved with a nonprofit to help raise awareness for veterans and their families. And the mix of me doing that, that motivated me, right? That motivated me every single day to get up and go do the work and in the mix of my own recovery. But I didn't really grasp the idea that, oh, wait, my purpose is there again. And it wasn't till probably, like, I got a little taste of it, but I think it probably didn't really resonate until maybe around 2007, 2008. And this was about 4 to 5 years after I was injured. And I remember vividly somebody telling me, when your story becomes less about you and more about helping others, that's when you're going to start to really make an impact. And I think that is when it became, this is my purpose, this is my identity, and this is now what inspires me continue to grow and to be challenged to evolve as a human being, as a speaker, as whatever I was trying to get into at that time in my life. So it took some time, man. And plus, there was a lot of emotional things that I had to work through. I mean, physically, I'd healed, but emotionally and mentally, I was still in a very early stages of my recovery. And part of that, I didn't even realize that I was in the recovery, but I was going through it.
It's fascinating because you preface this when you were talking about service, right? That service in the military, the service you're doing now. You know, the more time I've spent with people in any aspect of life, right? Those that are always serving and giving back, there's like an innate happiness that they have. I don't know what it is when you serve. And so it's funny. I'm sure you would relate, JR, but when you're meeting with people that maybe are struggling with depression or mental health, or, you know, that just the adversarial nature of life in some context for us, right? Those that are actually serving and going to do something for somebody else, it's amazing how it changes kind of your entire focus. You mentioned, you used the word identity here. I think that's a great word because so many of us, I mean, veterans specifically, you know, you come back to civilian world, maybe athletes that have been the top of their peak, you know, in athleticism, and they come back into the real, you call it the real world, whatever it is, but that identity changes. And how do you take on that identity? How does it become something? And I think service is a great ally. It's a great assistant to help you get to that happiness and joy and out of that, you know, that struggle.
Well, what I love about that concept, man, and when you talk about, you know, like for me, it's always been about get outside of myself, right? It's so easy to go inward when we're going through new things, when we're being faced with different adversity and different challenges. We go in and we sort of isolate ourselves from people in our circle, people that we love, people that we trust, people that we know deep down unconditionally love and support us. You know, but and then let alone anybody else in the world, right? We sort of isolate ourselves and we close ourselves off. And what I have learned, because, you know, I tell people this, like people ask me pretty frequently, how are you so confident, right? We feel this, we sense this confidence that you have. And I said, you know, I purely base all this comes from evidence like I look at evidence, and when I look at my life, I've got 20 years of evidence that has shown me, oh, I can do this. I can lean into that thing that's a little uncomfortable, or I could try that thing, because you know what? I've tried a few things that they kind of worked out. Like, okay, some things maybe didn't, but okay, I learned something from that. Oh, you know what? I fed the mind so much that I was never going to be able to be amongst what we like to call in the burn survivor community, normal people. I was never going to be accepted by normal people. I would never be allowed to, you know, date somebody that's beautiful and never have kids. Like, you just start to feed those narratives. That's you going in. And what I have learned over 20 years is that when I feel that starting to happen, because it still happens to me, I have to then, that's more of the invite of, I have to open myself up. So a quick story. So 6 months after I was injured, you know, man, I'm just going through the motions of everyday appointments, meeting with doctors, meeting with occupational therapists, going through the routine, right? And one of the nurses asked me to visit a patient who had just arrived at the hospital 6 months prior. And I was like, no, I don't want to do it, because I was 20 at the time. And I was like, there's no value I can bring. I'm 20. What do I know? What am I going to say? And I remember finally, after a lot of back and forth, I went into the room and it just felt heavy when I opened the door. And I wanted so badly, Brad, to just leave. I didn't want to walk into that room because it felt uncomfortable. Right now, some people, like I always tell people, like I was like, we really have to start to pay attention to our emotions and our feelings and really listen to ourselves and have those honest conversations, because we tend to say that is painful when it's really not painful. It's just uncomfortable. You know, there's a like, I'm just uncomfortable right now. But is it really pain? But when you start to tell yourself pain, it rejects you from even really trying. But if you can say, man, I'm just a little uncomfortable right now, that's okay. That doesn't feel so daunting in a sense. And I remember opening that door and it just felt uncomfortable. But I put myself in that patient's shoes, and I remembered all I wanted was someone just to walk in and say hi. And because I was on for about, I don't know, for almost the entire for 3 months initially that I was in a hospital, I was essentially isolated. I everybody that came into my room had to gown up from head to toe. My mother, who was in there in that room all day long, head to toe gowned up, because of the body being so, I mean, just it was easy for things to be transferred. Like if you walked mm-hmm. in
infection
from patient's room, mm-hmm. infections, things of that nature. And I just walked into his bed, man, and I just had a conversation. I just asked him who he was. I asked him where he was from. I asked him what unit he was in. And then the conversation just took off from there. And, you know, listen, I'm long-winded, and I like to tell a lot of stories, and I believe in those stories. There are multiple things that I believe you can take away from them. And that interaction with that patient, that was the first time that a conversation, the term conversation, was redefined for me. Because I had always believed for 19 years, or at that point 20, that a conversation consisted of Brad's going to speak for 50% of the time. I'm going to listen for 50, but then I'm going to equally speak, Brad, for 50% of the time. And Brad, you better give me my time, man. You better not cut me off at 49%. I better get 50%. And I realized after a 45-minute conversation with that patient, I realized, oh, a conversation could equally be me listening for majority of the time. And he spoke for about, 30 minutes. I mean, we spoke total for about 45, but he did most of the talking and I listened, and I only talked for a few minutes, but it was like, you know what? We had a conversation. And I remember as I was starting to walk out of the room, I said, hey man, I'll come back tomorrow and visit you. And he said, I'd appreciate that. I said, do you need me to bring you anything? He says, no, I just need a visit. That was it. He just needed someone to show up. I mean, think about that. That's and most of it, that's all we need. When we try to show up for other people, when we want people to do something for us, all we want is people just to show up. And a lot of times we tend to overthink things, saying, well, I don't know what to say. I don't know what to do. And it's like, well, just show up and be a human being and be, you know, show humility and say, I don't know what to say or what to do, but right now I'm willing to put myself in a space and we'll figure it out together. If that's what we need to do, we'll figure it out together. And so for me, being able to, in that stage of my life where there was a lot of confusion and there was still a lot of that self-doubt and a lot of that negative talk that was happening, and the only thing that would kind of give me purpose and give me a little bit of life was going to the hospital and seeing staff that became friends and cutting up and chirping along, but I was still hurting inside. And yet, after that interaction, I started visiting patients every single day. And I would put myself in all of these different rooms with different patients and their family members and just listen to them and talk to them and have conversation. And I believe by allowing myself to put myself in that position, I was able to get the things that I needed from those individuals, even though the intention was for me to show up and walk into the other burn survivors' rooms and say, hey, look at me, everything's going to be okay. That was the origin of why I did this. But ultimately, it turned into them giving me the things that I needed. And that's how service works. That's how, essentially, when people use the term charity, that's how it works. I'm going to have a fundraiser, or I'm going to go volunteer. I'm going to go do something for other people. And before you know it, those people that you're there to give something to, they give you something. But the key in that is, I want people to take away, you have to be willing to get outside of yourself. You cannot go inward. There are times and places to sit still and to listen to yourself and to pay attention to yourself and be present with yourself. But there are other instances, and it's a balance where you got to say, you know what? I'm gonna get on this podcast right now with Brad. Right before I logged on, Brad, I might not have been like my best mood, but you know what? I'm gonna show up. And by me showing up, Brad's gonna give me what I need. And dude, I just have over 20 years of evidence. I could tell you endless. We can spend the next 45 minutes to an hour me telling you stories of interactions that I've had with people that are quote unquote normal everyday people. And I say it, put it in the quotation, because like, I feel like I'm a normal everyday, you know, chill dude, but you know, just people you would never think, oh, that person has value, or that person could be the reason why it turns. Like, I've had so many stories and so many interactions. So for me, man, like, service is also, it's twofold, right? It's not only me trying to do something for somebody else, but I also know there's going to be something those individuals and this experience will give me that I need, not that I want, but I need.
There's tremendous value there. When you speak about just availability and showing up, I mean, that application works to all contexts of life, business. Yep. And I want to come back to the confidence, and because you mentioned how it's turned into, you know, how it has firm trust, and you know what you've done with that confidence, as you mentioned, empower others. But before we get there, for those that aren't familiar with your story, I think it's really relative, because you touched on it briefly, but specifically, I mean, football player, joined the Army, 19, walk us through what happened at the Humvee and how that essentially changed and put you in the position you are in today.
Yeah, man. You know, so again, I was 19 when I was in the Army, and I joined right out of high school. Again, went to basic training, got to my unit, deployed fairly quickly. And I was 19, driving a Humvee through a city called Karbala with three other troops in the Humvee, when the front left tire of the Humvee that I was driving ran over a roadside bomb. And it exploded. The other three troops were thrown out of the vehicle. We carried pretty much every time we went on a mission, we pretty much packed our Humvees with everything that we had, because you didn't know if you were going to need it. You didn't know if you were going to be able to make it back to camp. So we had, you know, 50 cal rounds. We had some missiles in the back of the Humvee. And of course, you know, this Humvee is now engulfed in flames, and I'm trapped inside in the driver's seat, and I can't get out. And everything's just shooting off. It's heating up and it's shooting off. And, you know, one of the things that was really challenging for me early on, when you talk about from a tactic, kind of a military approach, or just sort of a combat approach, is that, you know, I remember one of the early briefings that we got is that they said, hey, listen, if something happens to Brad, you can't just run in and go help him. You can't just run in and go save him. And naive 19-year-old JR raises his hand, which you don't do because you're a private. You don't have a voice. You just do it, man. You're not supposed to ask questions. But of course, this is Private Martinez, and Martinez has a lot of questions. And I see it in my 2.5-year-old son, who's always like, but why? But why? What's that? But why? What's that? And I'm like, oh, there's JR right there. And I remember asking, I'm like, what do you mean if Brad's injured, I can't just run in to go save him? Of course I got to go and try to save him. And I would expect him to do the same thing if I'm injured. And of course, my sergeant had to break this down, and he was like, no, you have to set up a perimeter, because you have to assess the scenario. You have to determine where, like, because what happens if you run in and now you're injured? Now we got to worry about two instead of one. And it was just having to reframe the mind to think in that way was very different. And so Of course, I was trapped inside of this Humvee for 5 minutes, completely conscious, feeling the pain. And I can, you know, and it's and I like to tell this story because I think it drives this point home. There's a lot of noise in our world. Whether you're watching, you know, whether you're on social media, whether you're watching the news, or whether you're watching TV, there's noise. You're aware of the noise. There's noise in our day-to-day routines. If you got kids, you know, like kids and activities, you got to get them here. You got to get them to school. We got a job. We got laundry. We got groceries. We got dinner. We got all sorts of things, right? There's a lot of noise in our lives. And a lot of us don't find moments to just sort of close our eyes unless we're going to sleep. That's when the only time we think of closing our eyes. But finding little moments to just close your eyes and just breathe. And just connect with your breath. And that is something that I was taught while I was in that Humvee. Now, it didn't really click until later in life, but I was taught that in that Humvee. So I have like case studies in my life consist of case studies, right? That I've kind of been walking and experiencing. And that was a case study in the sense of where I remember looking out the front windshield of the Humvee and seeing guys just running back and forth. And it was just chaos. And I could hear the chaos. And obviously, I was feeling the pain, and my eyes would get very heavy, and then they would close. And I would just keep my eyes closed. And in the midst of my eyes being closed, I felt at peace. There was no noise, there was no pain, there was no chaos. It was just me talking to myself and saying, I'm going to lose my life. I'm going to lose it in this way. And then there would come a moment where I would just say to myself, no, if I keep my eyes closed, I'm giving up. I can't give up. And I would open my eyes and I would continue to scream and yell at the top of my lungs because I needed to fight. I needed to hang on for someone to come and pull me out of that Humvee. And so I tell that story because I want people to remember that when they are in a moment of chaos, when there's a lot of chaos and noise in their lives, that in the midst of all that, you can still find some space where you can just close your eyes and just connect with your breath and breathe. And you're allowed to have those moments. You're allowed. Give yourself grace and say, it's okay for me to have this moment. I'm a human being. But then you have to remember, okay, that's my moment. And you open your eyes, you continue to find ways to show up and fight. And listen, I was medevaced. After 5 minutes, I was pulled out. I was medevaced. I was immediately put into a medical induced coma because, you know, yeah, my body, as you can see, the scars and, you know, the burns, the third degree burns that I sustained throughout my body. But the biggest thing at the time that was threatening whether I was going to survive or not was not the exterior, was the fact that I had inhaled so much smoke from the fire that I had broken ribs. It was hard for me to breathe. My lungs, everything was all messed up on the inside. And so they put me into the medical induced coma also too, because my body was going through a stage of shock. And I ended up meeting a medevac that was actually part of the team that took care of me. And she said, I vividly remember you constantly like pushing us off, telling us you were fine, that you were okay. And so we realized that's when we had to put you down because you weren't going to allow us to do the things that we needed to do. And, you know, man, like there's so many things that, again, you know, and I try to be respectful of people, of you, and, you know, asking me these questions, and I want to unpack all of the things, but I just can't help myself sometimes because there's all these different stories that I want to tell because I believe they drive a point home. And I, you know, 19 years old, people ask me, were you ever afraid? And I said, you know, fear. So fear is normal. Fear is fine. Fear is okay, right? Like, I think fear allows it, to me, it just makes me feel like, okay, you're alive. It's the body alarming you of something that you have to pay attention to. But I use fear now. At this stage of my life, I use it. Like, there's something that I'm a little afraid of. I lean into it and I use it to propel me and just move me in a direction that I want to go in. But when 19 years old, I didn't have those tools. I didn't have that awareness. And I remember the only thing I was afraid of when I found out that I was going to combat, I was never afraid, honestly, of being shot. I was never afraid. And you still had to learn hand-to-hand combat as an infantryman. And I was never afraid of somebody, you know, potentially getting stabbed. Like I was never afraid of anything. Like I honestly, even yes, I thought of the idea of dying, but I never was really afraid of that. The only thing that really made me afraid was the idea of a landmine. And I remember that in training, we had to go and there were these claymore mines and you'd have to low crawl up to it and, you know, defuse it and cut the wire and all this. And we did a extensive training, you know, in case we encountered this. And I always refrained from going up to that, like doing the best that I could. If I could find my way to the back of the line and not have to go through that, because it was daunting. The idea of there was this threat of something I could not see. Something I could not see, and all I needed to do was apply pressure and then it would detonate. Like that freaked me out, man. I mean, there was no other way to put it. And even in country, when we still trained on, you know, landmine, like I wanted no part of it. And what was the thing that almost literally took my life? A freaking mine. And so I want people, again, I'm going to say this a lot, and I'm sorry if it's annoying for the listener to be like, he wants us to do this so much, JR is constantly saying, I want, I want, I want. But I want you to just to pay attention to that story, because the things that we fear, if we give it so much energy and so much power, it becomes the thing that comes around eventually and gets us. I'm afraid of snakes, terrified of snakes. I can't stand snakes. You put a little baby snake next to me, and there's something about it. Just like, nah, it's not for me, not for me. And I live in Texas, and so you know, the summertime, those suckers are out, man. And people are like, oh, there's a nice trail by your house. I'm like, I'm not going on any terrain over there because I know how those. Nah, I'm good. But when I remember while I was in this medical induced coma, I remember after I came out of it having this random like dream, hallucination, whatever, where I was at some NASCAR driver's house. And I don't really watch NASCAR, so I don't know why I had that thought, but I was at a NASCAR driver's house. It was like this function, and I was sitting on the couch. My mom was there, but my mom was talking to somebody. And then all of a sudden, I see a snake crawling through the living room approaching me. And literally, the snake, I mean, lunges right at my mouth. And I grab this snake and I'm on the ground and I'm trying to pull it out. And all these people come like and hover right over me. And instead of them pulling the snake out, they're pushing the snake in. And my mom, I can see my mom standing over me and she's just crying. And it's freaked me out, this dream. And I remember like later, months later, I sat there and after talking to this medic and I realized, wait, that's when my fear came in the form of when they were putting me in a medical induced coma, they were for, 'cause she said, we had to hold you down and force this tube down your throat. But to me, it was my biggest fear that came into play. It was the snake. Dude, it's wild, man. It's wild how these experiences and the minds and the thing you give so much weight and so much power to can eventually be the thing that just weighs on you and just stays with you and in some cases paralyzes you. And so for me, that's why when I'm afraid of something or, you know, yeah, I lean it, I'm like, oh, I feel that. I feel that there's something about that. But you know what? You don't give it a shot because I've learned my lesson.
This episode is brought to you by Pella Windows. When it comes to building homes at AFT, almost every project has Pella Windows. And they've been just an incredible partner of ours. And locally, Sammy and Adam, they are not only amazing business partners behind us, but they are super close friends. And I speak on the podcast all the time about the importance of relationships, right? Relationships with our customers, with our vendors, with our suppliers. Because at the end of the day, I'm only as good as those that help our brand and assist us in our projects to take it from the ground up all the way to completion. And if we didn't have partners such as Pella, there's no way we'd be who we are today. Over the years, we've built this amazing relationship. When we call them or email them, they respond. They're quick. Their company culture, their integrity, their honesty. You know, they are always there to do what's right for us and the customer. They can do anything from small replacement projects to large custom homes and even multi-million dollar commercial projects. And also, when you think about their product line, they can do ultra contemporary, historical preservation, and large traditional projects. So for anyone, any scale, any size, They're the ones to call. They're here local. You know, they have an amazing Instagram. Make sure and give them a follow to see what they're doing. So if you need windows and doors, give Sammy and Adam a call. We stand behind Pella. We love what they do, their culture, their brand, and especially their quality. And if you want to learn more about Pella Windows, check our show notes. We'll have everything tagged there so you can give them a follow and have their contact information to reach out.
Our clients have worked with the Sub-Zero Wolf & Co. showroom Scottsdale on nearly every project. They make the process so easy for us and our customers with either an in-person or virtual consultation. They have dedicated consultants to answer questions, provide helpful solutions, and offer advice and assistance. When you are ready to embark on your kitchen journey, reach out to the Sub-Zero Wolf & Co. showroom, Scottsdale, who will tailor an immersive, rewarding experience just for you in their stunning showroom. Gather ideas, ask questions, and imagine how your dream kitchen might come to life. All catered to you in a low-pressure and highly inspiring environment. View an array of options and see what they look like in full-size kitchen vignettes. And attend a chef-led demonstration to see and taste these appliances in action.
I think that's fascinating. I mean, that correlation to when you're going to a medically induced coma and it's that same dream image, you know, is coming in as a snake, and that's the, you know, them trying to get the medication. For you, JR, over time, I can imagine that that mental fortitude, the mental strength, the willpower you have today is much different at 19. Even going through the recovery of, you know, driving over that landmine in the Humvee. But if I'm not mistaken, you had 34 months of recovery. I mean, it's essentially 3 years of recovery, not just the immediate, you know, 3 weeks of a medically induced coma. And again, as I mentioned, today it'd be a lot different. But at that time, what carried you? What, you know, for someone to go through 3 years of recovery and physical therapy and reconstruction and everything you had to do, you know, take us through that mental state of what that was like and how that's got you to where you are today.
So I have two kids. I have an 11-year-old daughter and a 2-year-old son. And, or should I say he's 2.5. Like, I don't know why we parents, we do that, right? Like we have to be exact, especially when they're young, we have to be exact. You know, it's like, it drove me nuts when, you know, when my kids were younger and you'd be like, they're 17 months. And I'm like, why can't you just say a year and a half? And they're like, no, 17 months, because they're hitting different milestones. But, you know, my 11-year-old plays softball and I coach her team. And I was talking to the girls. We just played our first tournament the other day. And I was talking to the girls and I was, you know, talking to them about the importance of celebrating, you know, these little victories. And you may not have won the game or you may not have won the tournament, but there are things within that game, within that tournament that you can celebrate. And that those are the things that carry you. So for me, gratitude was something I practiced early on. You know, a couple of months into my recovery, I remember obviously coming to the terms of, and when you use the word, you know, you mentioned earlier, you like the word identity, and you're like, that's a good word to utilize. And you mentioned the athletes and, you know, other people. And I think all of us have an identity, and it's tied to this thing that we've done or these group of people. And, you know, Brad, I refer to the day that I was injured, not as my alive day, which a lot of veterans do, and that's fine. I actually call it my rebirth. And the reason I call it my rebirth is because I truly believe parts of me died on that day, which left room for other parts to be born. And I believe that our identities are constantly experiencing rebirths. We are always going through a cycle of rebirths, right? Even as a parent, right? My daughter is 11. One day she's going to be 18, 19, 20 years old. She's not going to need me to take care of her the way that I take care of her now. My son's 2 years old. One day he's going to be 10, 12, 15. He's not going to need for me to take care of him like he's two anymore. Like, and so my role as a parent has to evolve. Well, that means that the way that I knew how to do things before has to end, die, whatever word you want to use. But I have to then embrace this new way of doing things, this new way of parenting. When it comes to a job, okay, I'm so accustomed to doing things for so long without leveraging technology, this camera and these lights and all these things. But now I realize in order for me to evolve and to get to the stage of where I want to go, I have to then experience a rebirth. And so this, you know, and so we're just constantly experiencing rebirths over the course of our lives. And, you know, I don't want people to think that, well, rebirth means that something dies and focus on that. No, it just means, yes, something is going to end, but something beautiful is waiting on the other side if you show up. And so for me, I practice gratitude early on. it was one of those things that when my identity was stripped away from me of not only being able to serve in the military again, but also seeing the reality of the scars and the extent of my injury, I fell into a negative space. I was depressed. I was angry. I mean, I would tell everybody that I would been better off had they just left me in the Humvee to die. I mean, I just didn't think that there was going to be any way for me to have a life. Again, people were happy that I was alive, but I was like, I'm never going to live. And there's a difference between the two. And I just kind of like, what's the point of being alive if I'm never going to live? And I started to, I kind of restructured, rewired my mind. And I started kind of just, you know what? I don't know what's going to come of this. But what I am going to do is every day I'm going to wake up and I'm going to try to find something to be grateful for. And in the midst of me going through that stage of my recovery, is you, I mean, what you're seeing today is this is 20 years post, right? So things look a lot better than what they did then. But I would still wake up in the morning, man, and I'd be like, you know what? Oh, I have range, a little bit more range of motion than I did yesterday. You know what? I can, because I had to learn how to walk again. You know what? I can do 3 laps around the room now. Yesterday, I can only do 2. You know what? Today, I can feed myself a little bit easier, right? So there's all these little things that I started to appreciate and find gratitude that there was growth and there was things that were happening. And that just continued to carry. And that's the way I live my life today. There's not these big, you know, not every day is a dancing with the stars, you know, like opportunity, the big splash, a big opportunity in front of, you know, millions of people. Not every day is like that. But every day there is something that you can pull away from that day. And so for me, the only way you find that is, again, you have to find those moments of pause and breath. You have to find those moments of really reflection. And when you do that, that's what carries you through. So 6 months after I was injured, I visit that patient. Now I'm starting to visit other patients. Guess what? That's going to give me a little life. That's going to carry me. That's going to push me through for a while. A year after I was injured, I get involved with this nonprofit, raising awareness for service members. Now I'm starting to see, ooh, I can go out and tell my story and talk about what I've experienced, talk about the challenges vets and their families experience. And there, and then the exchange becomes, the organization is able to say to me, hey, JR, when you go into that patient's room and you know that they're struggling financially because the spouse who had a job now has to quit their job to be a caregiver for their loved one for however long, you go in there, you give them this $2,500 check. All of a sudden that, guess what that does? Now that carries me, right? That I'm grateful that I get the opportunity to do these things and that carries me. When there's an opportunity I got to, I mean, there's just, again, I can go on and on and on and on about all of these things that have happened over the course of my recovery and over the course of my life that I just pay attention to and I find gratitude in. And that's what gives me the lifeline and it gives me the oxygen that I need to continue to show up every single day. That's why for me, again, when I find myself going, like having these days where I'm like, God, today sucks, man. Today is not a great day, because I'm entitled to that because I'm a human being. I allow myself to have that moment. I allow myself, if it's a day, I allow myself to have that day. And I know people are like, you're wasting a day. Well, you know what? I'd trade one day to be able to have 15 good days. So if I need one day to just sort of get my mind in the right place, if I need one day to feel something that my body is clearly telling me, like, hey, man, something's up. I mean, this book right here, I mean, the body keeps score. I mean, the body is constantly telling us and reminding us, hey, man, pay attention to this, pay attention to that. And so I'm always down to be like, you know what? Today's going to be my day. And then tomorrow I'll get what I need. And the life is going to give me what I need. So I'm just always paying it. I've had so many different, again, I don't want to sit here and sound like a broken record, but I just have so many experiences of people that I've got a chance to meet, of conversations that I've had with people. I mean, again, I mean, just literally the other day, I did a speaking engagement here in Austin, and it was at this restaurant in this area called The Domain. And as I was walking out of this restaurant, there was a couple that were sitting like in this little courtyard area right outside the restaurant's front door. And as soon as I walk out, going to my car, the guy stands up and he's walking towards me. And my thought process was, I mean, this is probably 9 o'clock at night. And I'm like, oh man, what does this dude want? right? I just spoke. I just had a great conversation, you know, just met some cool people. And I'm walking out and my first thought is, oh, what's this guy want? Like, what is he going to ask me for? And for some reason, you're sort of dreading that and kind of anticipating that it's going to be this or that. And the dude says, hey, man, would you mind taking a photo of my girlfriend and I? And I was like, oh, yeah, man, come on. Let me give you a whole photo album. Let's make this thing. I'm like setting them up. And I'm like, hold on, the lighting, the as best as I can do. And I'm giving him a bunch of photos. And I thought I took about, honestly, about 10 good photos. So I showed him. And he said, and she was like, oh, no, there was a great thank you. And he was like, no. He's like, can we take one more? And I was like, yeah, sure. I was like, you know what? Then let's switch it up. Let's get you guys with this backdrop. So I turned him around. And as I'm starting to take the photo, I notice that he reaches in his pocket. And I see as he's pulling something out, I see a little box. And I'm like, this dude is about to propose. So I quickly click it over to video and I record it. And sure enough, he gets down, he proposes. She's like, what? Are you serious? And yes, of course. And there's hugs and love and all this stuff. And I said, man, I wish you guys the best. I was able to capture that moment. That was awesome. And I walked away. And then as I, you know, took about 20 steps, I was like, you know what? I'm going to go back and ask them if I can take a photo with them. So I went back and I said, hey, can I take a selfie with you guys? And they're like, yeah, sure. So I did. But then I was like, can I do a video? And then I took a video with them and I said, hey, you know, this guy walked up to me and I didn't want him to know that I kind of assumed that he was gonna, like, I kind of dreaded, but he said something to me at the end of that video, when I stopped recording and I said, hey man, again, blessings to you guys. Wish you guys the best. He said to me, he says, man, I was just waiting for the right person to capture this moment. Life just literally came at me and said, bam, bam, JR, right in the face, dude. Like, you sit here and you think you got it all figured out and you had this moment where you, from a human standpoint, you immediately went and you kind of anticipated and dreaded. And then he sat there and said, I was waiting for the right person. I needed to have that reality check. And so life is constantly giving us those experiences. And so, you know, does it mean that I won't do that the next time? No, it just means that I'm going to be a little bit more aware that, you know what, I don't need to sit here and assume that it's going to be something negative, that it could be something really beautiful as celebrating two people coming together, deciding to spend the rest of their lives together.
I think that's a great example, because one of my favorite quotes of all time is from Mike Tyson. And Mike says, you know, everyone has a game plan until they get punched in the face, right?
Punched in the face.
Yeah. And so that example is totally real. And it's funny because you know, you spoke about confidence earlier, Jaron. And I've always, I've admired, you know, many people that have a lot of confidence. And, you know, and confidence comes from many ways. It comes from, you know, from an athletic standpoint, you know, that continual practice and effort and all the time behind the scenes that people aren't watching, right? You're grinding. And, you know, the public speaking, what you do, JR, I mean, you know, the content, you know, the material, right? There's an identity there that you're passionate about. You've had these experiences that lead to the confidence you have. And then also some of us have confidence because we've made major mistakes and we've learned from those mistakes. And so we can confidently speak to others or lead, or because we made those mistakes and so we don't want them to. And so, you know, it's kind of ingrained in us. And as you've been speaking this whole time, I've always seen that those that I'm around that are truly happy, like happy people, positive people, despite the chaos in the world. I mean, you mentioned early on when you're sitting there in that Humvee, and it was when you were kind of able to disassociate media and really be at peace with where you were at this time of your life. And the ability to disengage from those, to be happy, those are people that, as we've kind of hit on these points, it's those that are grateful, which you have gone through. You said, I'm grateful. Those that are grateful, like, you're just happier. And those that are serving, I mean, if you serve, if you're grateful, that's the core. I mean, you speak a lot about mental health, JR. I mean, that's really what can get you through these tough times of any trial that you're having in your life.
100%, man. And listen, you know, I'm glad you brought up the mental health, because that is something that is so important to me. And, you know, for a few years after I was injured, I mean, honestly, I'd probably say a decade after I was injured. Listen, I was not in a great place you know, those 4 to 5 years after I was injured. I mean, I would put on a good front, but I would go back to my apartment, to my room, wherever I was staying. And dude, I'd sit there and I'd just start playing music because I love music. And I would play music and I would just cry and I would just write. And as dramatic as it sounds, I remember there were many instances where I would go back home to my mom's house, and my room that I had when I was in high school, it looks out into like this wood line. And I would go back and I would sit there and open up the curtains, and literally it's dark, and I would just see the moon shining down on the tree line, and I'm listening to music in my headphones, and I'm crying and I'm writing. I don't know what I'm writing. I'm just writing what I'm feeling. Just a bunch of gibberish. I'm putting it down. And yet, you know, I needed to exhaust myself emotionally and mentally. I needed to feel that. I needed to allow myself, grant myself permission to get that stuff out. And yes, I was able to show up the next day and be my best, but there was like a front, right? There was like a little bit of a front. And part of that was learned behavior. I mean, my mom experienced a lot of trauma when I was a kid. You know, she raised me by herself. And, you know, I remember one time my mother was a victim of domestic abuse, and the guy she was seeing at the time put his hands on her. I called the cops. The cops took him away. And this was kind of a frequent routine for the few years that they were together. And I remember the next day after they took him away, we were out, and my mom was just smiling. Just smiling, just big old smile, 4'11", biggest smile that you would ever see that fill a room. I mean, just boom, hey, just smiling. And I'm like looking at it. I'm like 6 years old. And I'm like, why is this lady so damn happy? And I literally saw him put his hands on her. And then I asked her, because, you know, I'm just a curious dude. And I'm like, why are you smiling? I know what happened last night. And my mom said something to me. She said, I smile to invite the blessings. I smile because if I allow that moment to change my energy, I'm never able to see the beautiful things that are coming our way. So I smile to receive those things. Now, as I got older, I realized, wow, how beautifully profound that is. But as I started to get into therapy in my, you know, early 30s, I realized, oh, how unfortunate that she's stuck in that mindset that you have to just put on this front, and that just because you put on this front and smile and the blessings come, everything's going to be okay. And I realize, because I've seen it with my mother, unfortunately, all those things that she just kind of suppressed, like she just kind of buried and buried and buried, and then just smile, those things have resurfaced later in life. And those things have unfortunately hindered her ability to have a quality life and to really receive the blessings that are truly in front of her. Now, I know I'm probably hinting at some things, and people are like, what does that mean? What does he mean by that? And I don't want to, again, I don't want to, you know, get too deep into things, because I want to leave time for whatever else you want to ask me, but I'm down to go with that route if people want to, but whatever. But essentially for me is I've learned that a lot of the challenges and that I experienced after I was injured was not even related to my injury in Iraq. I mean, yeah, that was probably the light, you know, the thing that ignited all of this stuff, and the fuel was just kind of sitting there from 19 years of trauma and things that I experienced in my youth. And all you needed was one thing to come and just light it. And it wasn't until, like I said, like a decade later when I got into therapy and I realized, oh, wow, there's a lot of things I'm still carrying from my youth. There's a lot of trauma that I still get triggered by that I bring into relationships. I mean, I still am guilty of doing it now, where sometimes someone kind of gave me a reality check, you know, a few months ago, and was like, it's not fair that you bring. And it's somebody that I work with, and they're like, it's not fair that you bring this into this, you know, because you're bringing other stuff from past, you know, experiences or past, you know, and I'm like, oh, that's right. I still do that. And even though I try to be hyper aware of it, like I have to be very careful that if Brad doesn't call me back, or Brad said he was going to do something, but then he doesn't do it, I can't immediately say, well, there we go. Everyone's always disappointing me. Everyone's always telling me they're going to do something, and then they don't do it, when the reality is Brad has a life, and maybe Brad should have just texted me back and say, hey, my bad, man. I'll get back to you. Things are a little crazy right now. Let me circle back with you when things settle down. And then Brad, you should have done that. You should have let me know that. It would have put me at ease. But you know what? We're human. And when we're in the fire, we're just trying to get out of it. But I shouldn't immediately associate that, oh, Brad is now this person that I've experienced over the course of my life. No. And so I got into therapy, man. And when I got into therapy, I realized, one, I needed to learn how to establish boundaries. You see that thumbs up that just popped up on the screen?
That little, yeah.
What is that?
You're doing awesome. Everyone likes it.
like what is it? Where'd that come from? I don't even know. Like, is it my left thumb? Is it like a perfect position? like what was that all about? I was just like, who did that? I'm like, I didn't touch anything. It's like a weird setting I have, but I guess I'm on a flow and I'm in a good mojo right now. Just keep it going.
You're in the zone.
But,
you're in the zone. Yeah.
but the thing is that I have learned that I need to establish boundaries, not only with the people that are in my circle, but also with just people in general. I have to always do an inventory of how much do I have? How much do I have to give? How much do I possibly need to receive? And I think that is important to do. And I'm, you know, at the beginning, when you kind of mentioned all these things that I've dabbled into that I've been able to do, listen, I think the thing above all that, the thing that I'm most proud of is I'm a cycle breaker. And my father wasn't in my life. He left when I was 9 months old. Now here I am, a father to two beautiful children. I've created this home that, yeah, we have our challenges as any family does, but we're a beautiful family and we're raising two beautiful kids and we're creating these beautiful memories. And that's something I never had growing up. The fact that my mother guilted me a lot when I was a kid, because my mother had fear. My mother had fear because she had lost so much over the course of her life, that she just was afraid of losing me because I was the only consistent thing in her life. And so what she did is she used guilt as a tool to keep me there. So I wouldn't leave. So I would fill that void inside of her. And I always, every time I walked into the house after school, I honestly, like, there's a book and I have it somewhere in here, but it's called Walking on Eggshells. And when I read that book, I mean, I remembered my youth and how I would walk into the house and I never knew what state my mother was going to be in. And if she was in a bad mood, even if it had nothing to do with me, I was conditioned that I had to say, I'm sorry, Mom. I'm sorry, Mom. I love you, Mom. And try to make it all better. That's the way I was conditioned. So you imagine someone that's raised that way, they become an adult. Now every relationship, they're constantly exerting themselves, trying to make everything right with everybody else. Hey, I'm sorry. Is it okay? What can I do to help you? What can I do to make it better? Right? And that's not the healthy way of going about it. And, you know, listen, it took years for me to realize that. But I remember when my daughter was four, she's about four and a half. And listen, there's a whole story in relation to my wife and I. My wife and I were separated. My daughter was a year old and we separated. I mean, it was a clear break. We were done. Like, we were co-parenting. We were doing the whole visitation thing. It was legitimately like a separation. And I remember one day when my daughter was with me and it was like a Friday, she came to my house and she, later that evening, getting ready for bed, she says she missed her mom. That's normal. She's four and a half. And I was triggered. And I said, what? You don't love me? You don't love me? What? You just saw her. You're going to see her in a couple of days. You don't love me? And my daughter's like, no, I do love you, Daddy. And she's crying. And I'm literally like making her, guilting her and making her feel this way. And she goes to bed. And this is the key. I have a person. Now I have multiple people, but there's one person in my life that's my dude, man. He's the dude I can call when I need to celebrate something. He's the guy that I can call when I need to, like, dude, I'm effing something up right now. And it's my best friend, Dan, who's 17 years older than me. And I called him and I said, man, I just did this. And he says, and he started clapping. And he said, okay, you're aware of it. That's good. You're aware of it. Now, how are you going to make it better? And what are you going to do to prevent yourself from doing that in the future? And that was like, oh, there's that pattern. There's that learned behavior. I'm now starting to pass that on. And then I literally, the next day, said to my daughter, and she's 4 and a half. And I'm just more of just trying to establish that daddy can come to you and say, I'm sorry. Daddy made a mistake. Daddy was wrong. And I didn't mean what I said, and I'm sorry. And I started doing that with her even then. So now at 11 years old, she gets it. I feel like I'm instilling in my daughter emotional intelligence where she's able to be able to show up and be able to, like, receive that and not to, you know, but also know she doesn't have to deal with that a lot. Like, she can kind of say, okay, maybe that's someone else's, you know, situation they're working through right now. I don't have to necessarily inherit that and have to live in it. And so, you know, for me, from a mental health standpoint, I think I do a lot of yoga now, man. And I love the practice of yoga just because it really at the core is just really just connecting with your breath. It's just really about stillness, and it's about what you do with that stillness. It's about setting an intention for that hour that you're going to be, you know, practicing. But we should all be practicing that every single day. You're on your way to work, or you're driving your kids to school. You just dropped them off, or you're driving home. You're on the way to the gym. Set the intention. What's the intention for that practice? What's the intention for that day? What's the intention? Just like we do these really famous, you know, vision boards, you know, at the beginning of the year, and you spend $100 on magazines that you're never going to read, but you just cut out all the things that don't look good. And hey, I get it. It's a fun practice, but you should be doing a vision board literally almost every day of your life.
It's incredible. You've done some powerful things, JR, throughout your career and lifetime. And you'll continue to do so, but you made a comment that you're a cycle breaker. I think that's a pretty powerful statement that you just mentioned, just about being triggered by trauma and understanding that you're breaking the cycle and essentially working, you know, to break cycles for others. As you look back, you know, on the impact you've made, you know, been public speaker for, you know, Delta, Wells Fargo, so many companies, you continue to do so. You have, you know, the book you wrote. What drives you today?
What drives me? What drives me today?
Yeah.
Man, I feel like you're about to witness 2 minutes of me just closing my eyes and being still and just really, because I think I'm, you know, I'm in a really unique place in my life right now. You know, Brad, I've been very fortunate, man, where I have been blessed with opportunities, as you mentioned, to be in front of groups and people and meet people and travel the world and have these beautiful experiences. But I think, and I want to be completely transparent and vulnerable here with people as well, in this point of where, you know, we have to be careful. And I'm not saying this is everybody's truth. This is mine. But I just want to put this alert out there. That in the midst of all these great blessings and opportunities that come, that you always stay true to who you are and the reason you got into that work in the very first place. As a speaker, a couple years after I was injured, it was introduced to me that I could be a speaker, and I was like, I don't want to do that. And then eventually I started to like, oh man, I like this. This is cool. This is awesome. And you know, again, I think it's kind of in my personality, like to kind of just work with that. And, you know, I've been doing it for years. And I've always said to myself early on is that when I do this, I do it because I want to serve, because I want to give back. And there came a point in my life, in my career, where things were, as you know, you're a football guy, you know, like Antonio Brown, who, you know, played wide receiver in the NFL. He said, business is booming. Business is booming. And business was booming for a period. And there was a stretch of time where I then became disconnected as to from the reason why I did the work. And I started to chase the monetary. I started to chase the acknowledgement that I'm good at this and I'm one of the top speakers in this space and et cetera, et cetera. And I started getting away from it, getting away from it, getting away from it. And I was humbled years later. I was humbled when all of a sudden everything stopped. And then I had to like, I had to have that honest conversation with myself that I started chasing the wrong things. So for me, I always kind of work from that place. But I think, you know, over the years, I have been so busy with speaking and I love it. I love speaking and I'm going to do it for the rest of my life. As long as I can get on a plane or maybe like John Madden, get on a bus or Whoopi Goldberg, right. Never fly, yeah. But I'll get on a bus. I'll get to an event somehow. But I love speaking. I love being in a space physically with people to feel the energy. Because I'm an energy guy and we exchange energy. I mean, even though this is through a computer, I can feel your energy and your good energy. And I'm like, man, I love this conversation because of the energy you're giving off. But I know I'm going to be doing it for the rest of my life. And I want to do it for the rest of my life. But I'm in this stage right now where I'm kind of like, how do I find some balance where I can still be home with my kids and really appreciate this stage of life that they're in, that I'm in with them. How do I create some balance where I take care of myself, not only physically, but emotionally, mentally, spiritually? Like I think for years, I just was go, 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 and spreading myself so thin. And a lot of that is self-inflicted because it's part of my love language. My love language is acts of service. I love to do things for people. So unfortunately, the trap is I start saying, yeah, I'll do that. Yeah, Brad, what do you need? I'll do it, Brad. Okay, cool. And then before you know it, at the end of the day, I'm frustrated because I didn't get the chance to do this. I didn't get a chance to work on that. Or I'm just triggered. And what good does that do? Like, I'm not working out. I'm not practicing different things that are important to me and my body. Like, there's just, the list goes on. So I think what drives me, new ways to create connection, finding new ways to create story and unpack story and just find ways to heal physically, emotionally, mentally, spiritually. I want to continue to be not only the best person that I can be, but I want to be the best dad I can be. I want to be the best husband I can be, the best friend I can be. I want to be the, you know, I just want to be able to show up as the human being that I know I have the capability of showing up as. And I just want to continue to find ways to do that. And so for me, I just want to get back to, and I've been working on, and you know, I'm kind of in that place now where I get to appreciate every opportunity I get to connect, whether it's through a podcast, whether it's through a speaking engagement, whether it's interacting with somebody on the street. Like the young man that asked me to take the photo that at first I kind of anticipated it was going to be something else, but it turned out to be something beautiful. And I just want to be able to just show up as JR knows he can and always wants to show up in that way.
Well, I love that. I think that's very fitting as we close this because I'm super grateful for your time, JR. And the reason I asked that question is because you've made a huge impact for a lot of people. And I think there's a lot of value there. And you mentioned just personally how you broke the cycle and the confidence builder that is. And, you know, the ability to stay grounded, because you alluded to it with the Antonio Brown example. But, I mean, it's really easy for the success that you've had to get sidetracked. And, yeah, you know, but that's not who you are at the core. And I think it's pretty rare to find people. So I commend you for that, JR. So thank you for sharing and being so vulnerable and sharing that personal information. I know myself and many others who listen to this, you know, there's great advice and power, and you're doing wonderful things. So thank you. And for those listening, where can they find you? That way they can continue on with the journey and, you know, so much expertise you have to share.
Well, first and foremost, man, thank you for having me on. I genuinely enjoyed this conversation and, you know, would welcome the opportunity for you and I to continue to chat and expand on other things.
We need to, if I interrupt you, because we got through like 2 out of 20 things, but anyways, yeah.
Hey, I'm around, man. Let's do it. Let's make it happen. But no, man, this was great. So thank you for the time. As far as where people can find me, connect with me, obviously there's my website, jrmartinez.com, but you can hit me up on all social platforms at I am JR Martinez. And again, when I talk about connection, you know, I really encourage and hope people reach out just to say hello on social platforms. And I love to try to connect with people on utilizing, you know, those platforms in that special way. And so, you know, just reach out, say what's up. You know, if you want to, if you feel the need to share and, you know, some stuff, then we can unpack some stuff. But, you know, hit me up. That's the biggest thing I just encourage people to do. But thank you so much, man. I really appreciate your kind words and appreciate you creating this space, because it felt like a very safe space for me to, you know, unpack some things as well.
Well, thanks, JR. If you get value from the show, please support us by giving a 5-star rating and review on whatever platform you listen to. And I also have a favor to ask. We've had some incredible guests that come on and share their wisdom, their knowledge about their business. So if you have friends or family members that could benefit from those episodes, please share it with them, as well as any other business owners that you're networking with that could get value from the podcast or certain episodes. Please share those as well. Again, subscribe, make sure you're following. Any questions that you have, topics, we've had listeners reach out about certain guests that we should have on the show. Again, brad.l@aftconstruction.com. Email me for topics to address, guests that we should have on, and even if you think you'd be a great guest for the show. So again, thank you for all your support, and we'll see you next time.